Well, thank you very much indeed for that very kind introduction, John. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you all for coming. And here's the exam question which we have been asked to answer. And it's a very kind of pertinent one because there seems to be, although GDP would seem to be an arcane subject, there seems to be lots of public interest in GDP. So John Selborne, in his very kind introduction, mentioned Diane Coyle. Diane Coyle has an excellent book called GDP, A Brief But Affectionate History, which I recommend. Very popular best-selling book, all about GDP. Here's a report by Charlie Bean, a retired deputy governor of the Bank of England, who talked a lot about economic statistics and GDP as well. That's been, if you speak to Charlie Bean about this, he's on the public record as saying he's surprised by what tremendous interest there has been in this, and Charlie has spent lots of time travelling around many countries talking about these types of issues as well. There's also some doubt about GDP. David Pilling, a very senior journalist from the FT, has a recently published book called The Growth Delusion. And straight, you know, early into the book, he starts with his view about GDP. So here's a quote from page 12. We live in a society in which a priesthood of technically trained economists, wielding impenetrable mathematical formulae, set the framework for public debate. And that begins his views about economists and GDP in general. And this gets more and more, more and more sort of trenchant throughout the book. So if you read through to page 304, you find the following. The invention of GDP has given rise to a class of technocrats and economists who implement policy for the good of the economy, but not always for the good of the rest of us. There are many people in this room who, of course, including me, who are guilty as charged of these accusations. So this is big bananas, and it just goes to show that we should thank Dougal for instigating this debate, because it's an important public debate, and it's not just the concern of a narrow group of technocrats. So let me say what my view is straight away. I'm just going to argue in the next 10 minutes or so that we shouldn't throw away GDP. We should keep the desirable features of it, but improve it. And in this presentation, I wanted to talk about some of the desirable features to sort of set the scene a little bit and ask what we could do to improve it. And then we'll go on to discuss all of that. All right. So since GDP is about counting the economy, why don't we start with a small economy? So here's a small economy here, and I asked the question, how can we count this economy here? This is the Amazon warehouse in Dunfermline, Scotland. Now, of course, the economy as a whole consists of billions and billions and billions and billions of goods. And so the Amazon warehouse, let's see if we can get our arms around that to start with, because that consists of not billions and billions and billions of goods, but quite a few goods nonetheless. So the first question is, how are we going to count all this stuff here? And let's suppose, for sake of discussion, that there are 100 iPads, 100 biros, 100 packs of photocopy paper. You can see if you're sitting at the front, here are some flat-screen TVs, all the things you might imagine are in the Amazon warehouse. You might ask the question, first of all, just suppose there were those three items, how would we count all of that together? How somehow or other are we going to add together iPads and biros and packs of photocopy paper? So this adding together is an issue which lots of devisers of these index numbers have taken up. And the Human Development Index, to leap outside this just for a second, solves this problem in the following way. It takes three perfectly kosher indicators of economic development and economic situations across different countries, life expectancy, education, and GDP per capita, simply multiplies them and takes the cube root. So there's one method of combining all this stuff together, and it's a method essentially which just gives everybody the same weight. So we feel a little bit uncomfortable about that. And so it seems to me that principle number one, there are going to be just two principles. So principle number one is, let's use some meaningful weights. It's not clear to me that just arbitrarily adding this stuff together is going to get us very far. So that's the first point. Second point is, I now ask about output in this little mini economy. And this mini economy consists of the Amazon warehouse we saw a second ago. And according to Google Maps, 3 miles away, there's the Bay Printing Company, your local printer with local prices, who'll do some photocopying for you. And you might imagine that this isn't too difficult a problem. Let's figure out how to combine the biros and the pieces of paper and this, that, and the other, and the iPads over here. Let's figure out how to combine the pieces of paper. That's presumably what's produced over here. Let's add those two things together. John Pullinger, head of the ONS, he's in charge of that. He can add. How difficult can this be? So if you give it a moment's thought, you'll realize that there is a significant problem, which is, suppose it's the case that the printers buy their paper and biros from Amazon. We wouldn't want to count the paper and the biros here and count it again over here. So we've got to do something about what in economics we call these intermediate goods. If we count everything twice, three times, four times, that's no good. So as I say, suppose they do that, then we got into some difficulties. And again, there are some index numbers out there which sort of don't worry about this problem. And my favourite, or rather my least favourite, is the EU Innovation Scoreboard, which adds together a whole load of kind of general indicators of innovation in the EU, one of which is R&D, the other is high-tech equipment exports. It adds them all together, and then just, I think there are 17 of them, and then just takes 1/17 of all of those. And you can see a significant difficulty here, which is that presumably some of the R&D might go, as it were, into the high-tech equipment exports. And so counting those twice, that seems to be a little bit uncomfortable. So principle number two is let's not double count. Okay, so how can we improve GDP? And I'll come to the vacuum cleaners in just a second. So the first is, I think we can build on the strength of GDP. And you can see here that the meaningful weights that we want to use, it seems to me, are prices. So the message of GDP, the reason why John Pullinger and his team can add up all these different goods in the economy, is we can weight them by prices. Therein, it seems to me, lies a kind of a deep point, which is what economists are interested in. It's not these kind of shifting around of these funny curves. It's the notion that prices in the economy give you an incredible amount of information about people's valuation in the economy and their relative importance. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that since we don't want to double count, we can subtract out the intermediate goods. So we can't just add together, as I say, the Bay paper shop with Amazon. We need to subtract off the paper that the paper shop is using. Okay, that leads to at least a few issues. The first question is, what is an intermediate good? And here we need to know what it is we're going to subtract off. So if we think about Dyson, for example, who did a load of R&D in order to get further on than a Hoover, how we treat the R&D is quite difficult. We could treat the R&D as being like the photocopy paper at the Photoshop. In other words, it's just all used up in a year. Or we could say that the R&D and other types of knowledge give an enduring type of benefit to Dyson. So that's the first difficult choice, and we need to confront that. Second choice, again, the kind of the key question in economics, is do prices give the right signals? So the first question is, prices, there may be lots of situations where there are no prices. So this is known in rather, this is rather arcane, the production, non-production boundary. Think of it this way. If you do your own vacuum cleaning, that's non-production because I'm just doing it at home. If I pay somebody to do the vacuum cleaning, then suddenly that's production. So if things go up and go back and forth across the production border, then we have to figure out what the right signals are. The second is that it wouldn't escape your notice that there are quite a lot of free goods around, Google Maps, Skype phone calls, Facebook, and so forth as well. So there's another example where we actually don't have any prices at all. So it's all very well us saying to John, well, weight everything up by prices. He should come back to us and say, well, how do I deal with Facebook and Google Maps? There are no prices at all. So that's the second kind of question. Third issue is around quality adjusted prices. And so here, just to sort of give you a little bit of an insight into how economists spend their evenings, we spend lots of time worrying about vacuum cleaners. So let's just have a quick look at the time series of the price of vacuum cleaners. This is between January 1996 and January 2013. And if you look at the sticker price of vacuum cleaners that the ONS goes around and collects, you can see it's got this very jumpy sort of a pattern. And in particular, there's a big jump up here in January. I think this is January 03. So the way this works is the ONS tells its price collectors to go out and collect the prices of vacuum cleaners. And if the vacuum cleaner basket consists of just a whole load of Hoovers, it collects Hoovers every time. But then when Dyson comes along, it then has to start collecting the prices of the new goods. And therefore, what can happen is if the composition of the basket changes, you get this very large increase in the price. Now, the question is that large increase in the price really inflation? Or is it the fact that you've just got better quality vacuum cleaners in your basket? And the answer is there are various procedures, and it's all kind of chained together, so it's not treated as a rise in inflation. This point is kind of brought down to here, so the thing is chained smoothly together. That's an implicit form of quality adjustment. This is very difficult, especially in an era where we've got lots of goods changing their quality all the time. Okay, last slide. Dougal asked me to put up some sort of questions. As I mentioned, what about the production, non-production boundary? I mentioned housework, Airbnb is an example where you're using your house to sleep in and suddenly a technology comes along and you can use your house to rent it out. How do we deal with free goods and so on? And lastly, I've put up this notion of a dashboard approach. So those of you who know the ONS Wellbeing Dashboard will know that you can log on and you can look at lots of different indicators, life satisfaction, whether people feel that their lives are worthwhile and their happiness and so on. And if you do that, you get a whole dashboard of indicators. And maybe one way of solving this weights problem is essentially to privatise it, that each individual could decide how they feel about these different indicators. I leave that for further discussion, but at that point, Dougal, I will stop.